The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Professor Brendan Kelly has been a guest on this programme a number of times in the past, talking about mental health issues. He's written a number of fascinating books, but he's now done something, a very personal journal of taking up meditation, which is an interesting thing for a psychiatrist to do. It's in the book, The Doctor Who Sat for a Year. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us here in the programme. Why meditation? Why, to what many people, is that hippy-dippy stuff?
Yeah, meditation has a history of being a bit hippy-dippy. It also has a history in many religious and spiritual traditions, and it's been all over the place. And people practice all kinds of contemplation without knowing they do it, be it knitting, be it fly fishing, be it running for some people. But in recent years, there's been a lot of interest in mindfulness as a treatment or as a way of sort of settling yourself and living better and being better. And mindfulness is now all over the place. Everywhere you look, people are talking about mindfulness.
It's fashionable and trendy, but does it work?
Well, a lot of the fashionable stuff, you know, it's becoming called McMindfulness because it's being marketed so heavily. But in fact, it's a core part of Buddhist contemplative practice, and it does work when it's undertaken properly. And the purpose of the book really was to try and do that, not just dip in and dip out whenever I felt like it, but to try to meditate every day for a year and produce a kind of a sustainable meditation habit rather than... You know, the way you hear, Matt, some people might head off to India for a week and meditate for 20 hours a day and have hallucinations and then come back and never meditate again. I wanted to try and do the opposite of that and really integrate it into a busy, modern, urban life.
Before we get through the nuts and bolts of what you did and how it worked for you, what prompted this?
Well, I've had a long-standing interest in Buddhism. Years ago, I studied Buddhism for several years, and in retrospect, I think that was intellectualizing. It was a complicated way to avoid actually meditating, as far as I can figure, because we can think of all kinds of reasons not to meditate. They did a study of meditation in prisons, and a lot of prisoners dropped out of the program. And when asked why, they said they didn't have the time, which is very interesting, because we make up excuses not to do it. So I suppose I came to a point in my mid-40s, if I can be that little bit vague on my age, when I thought, I need to either get on top of this now or the chance might slip away.
Yeah, but why? Why the need? Was there some sort of issues in your mental health that you felt needed to be addressed by meditation? As somebody who, on a regular basis, deals with people with extreme mental health issues...
I suppose I saw the usefulness of mindfulness when properly practiced in different people, and not just people who might have anxiety or depression, but also, if you like, for the betterment of well people. You know, if you're looking to sort of live more fully or to sort of focus on the moment or be more aware in your life on a day-to-day basis, that this kind of practice can help. So there was no mental health problem. There was no crisis that precipitated this, just a growing awareness that it would be a good thing to do. Like a lot of people think, they think meditation would be a good thing to do, but somehow or other never actually get around to settling into a habit of meditating. And I decided the time has come. That's what I would do. And thus the book, The Doctor Who Sat for a Year.
By coincidence, in case any listeners think I'm sounding exceptionally sceptical about this, I've actually been trying this a little bit recently. Downloaded the Headspace app onto my phone. Have tried sitting at home in the mornings to actually get myself into the zone or whatever it is that you're supposed to do. And at the moment, I'm struggling with it. So you tell me how you managed to get into it.
Well, you struggle with it. This is what happens when you sit down to meditate in a quiet-ish place, because you're never going to find a fully quiet place, in a solitary-ish place, because you're never going to find the perfect location. The first thing that happens when you try to clear your mind is a million thoughts come flying into it. You want to stand up, check your text messages, look at your emails, get a cup of tea, move stuff around meaninglessly in the room you're in. And that is good. You need to welcome that, because if you could sit in an entirely blissed out state for 15 minutes, there's no point practicing meditating. The work is bringing your mind back from the distractions to focus on either nothing, or a lot of us find it easier to focus on something fairly meaningless like your breath, or focus on the position of your body, or just focus on something that stops your brain flying off in 100 different directions, which is what tends to happen. The fact that you're struggling with it, Matt, is good. It indicates that you're trying to do it right, and it indicates that this is the skill you do need to polish up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that did strike me the other day as I was doing it. I was quite interested to discover that as I sat there in silence for the first time ever, I actually realised I could hear the birds chirping outside the house.
Yes, the birds are an astonishing thing, and the birds feature a great deal in the book because they're constantly chirping outside the window. What also features in the book a great deal is the cat. I have a cat, and, you know, she sits there with such quietude, watching me try to meditate, fail, stand up, sit down, try again, fail, get irritated, and she just sits there watching. She'll then yawn and go to sleep. So she has this quietude and this presence in the moment that I envy. But the purpose of meditating, Matt, isn't really to have a good meditation sit. The purpose is to struggle while you're meditating, but then between meditation sits, you would be more composed and more relaxed.
Well, I was just about to ask what the benefits are. Why would you be more composed and relaxed?
Well, what's happening is you're making quietude and mental quietude into a habit. So this will become more like a default position. So, for example, later in the day when you're in the traffic and let's say someone cuts in front of you in a thoughtless and boorish fashion, which does happen, it's easy to feel very irritated at the injustice of that. And often we find we feel irritated for quite a long time, disproportionately. So the skill meditation teaches is that your reaction in that situation would not be as severe. Maybe you wouldn't honk the horn so much. Maybe you wouldn't start shouting out the window at the long gone driver. It's meant to make your reaction less and make it more proportionate. And certainly what I found over the year is that was a real effect. And it also, meditation also makes you more aware of the moment you're in, more grounded, more, you know, you inhabit the space you're in, you inhabit the moment you're in a better way. And that's incredibly important. I think we now live in a world where attention, a focus is a new currency, be it on the internet, be it in the media, be it wherever. And meditation teaches you to focus that attention more precisely on the present moment.
Is this the secular version of prayer as it used to be for many Catholics and maybe still is for many people who are listening? The idea that if you maybe sat at home and did the rosary or did a whole series of prayers that you were actually getting yourself into, by repeating the mantras of the prayer, yeah, a relaxed state.
Absolutely. A lot of people use a mantra or sort of a self-chant taken from Tibetan Buddhism. But in practice, and the effects on your brain are very similar to that achieved, say, through the rosary or through other kinds of repetitive prayer. And these are very powerful techniques. Other people achieve a similar state in different ways. So I was talking to one woman once about meditation, and she said that's the exact same as knitting. And I told her, no, it's not. It's nothing like knitting. It's completely different. But then she said that when she's knitting, she has no thoughts in her head at all, just the rhythm of the needles. And she's entirely immersed in the moment. And of course, she was absolutely right. Getting into the zone like that is just like or is a form of meditation. And as she said, it's even better because not only do you have a period of absorption in the present moment, at the end you also have a lovely jumper or a scarf or something. So she thinks that knitting wins over meditation every time.
You did it for a year.
Hmm.
You logged your progress day by day. You journaled. In fact, there's a lot of people also say that what they call journaling is now a very good way for actually maintaining an equilibrium and balance in your mental health as well. Did you find that?
Yeah, the writing, the daily entries was interesting because it did force a different kind of reflectiveness as well as the awareness that meditation itself produces. Oddly, writing the journal also created a sort of a social pressure. I'm not entirely certain who I was writing it for. Now it's a book and it's available to the public in all good bookshops. But at the time, even when writing it and no one read it as I went along, it exerted an additional pressure for me to keep going. And this is interesting. A lot of people go to meditation groups because they struggle to have the discipline necessary to meditate every day at home. And choosing to go to a group produces a little bit of social pressure.
As you develop your meditating skills, if that's the right expression to use, do the sessions become longer? Do they become different in what you practice? Do you enter a state almost of some sort of bliss?
The sessions tend to become longer. You know, it goes up from 15 or 20 minutes per day up to 30 or 60 minutes. But most of us, there are limits on how long we can spend meditating.
You're
any
a busy
day.
Psychiatrist. You work between Trinity College and Tallahassee. Yeah. Where do you get time to meditate every day?
Well, I mean, I talk about this a bit in the book as well. I have this habit all my life. I've woken at 6 a.m. I just wake up 100% awake, ready to go. There's no start-up time. There's no difference weekends, weekdays, holidays. It's always the same. I'm just programmed that way. So that happens to suit this very well.
After how many hours sleep?
Oh, after maybe 6 or 7, sometimes 8. But it's just the way I'm sort of biologically made. And a lot of people are like that. A lot of people find the time to run early in the morning or to do other things. So it is possible to integrate it. But there are limits on the time. But over time, the duration spent meditating does tend to increase. But also the nature of it changes. You do become better at it.
And are you now a happier or more relaxed person? Or how would you describe your state of mind now compared to before you started meditation?
Now I am certainly more aware of my moment-to-moment changes in emotion, which were clearly disproportionate. Often I would be irritated about something, but now that I interrogated sooner, I realise I'm often irritated about something terribly minor that doesn't matter in the slightest. So that's certainly very helpful. I think my concentration and attention are better as well, because meditation teaches the skill of focus and sitting still. And those are skills that are lost and increasingly lost in a world where we apparently want to click something every 7 seconds and we get restless if we don't. So meditation combats that quite nicely.
Are you a better psychiatrist?
That's a very interesting question. I think the focus that meditation can improve helps a lot. If there's one thing people really respond to, it's when you are focused on them and really listening. And people know when you're listening and they know when you're not. And meditation helps a great deal with focusing and really listening when people are speaking.
And in your less serious cases, would you recommend meditation as an alternative to, say, an antidepressant?
We certainly recommend meditation and mindfulness therapies to some people, certainly for people who are presenting with sort of unhappiness and problems of living, as opposed to what we might call more serious depression. There isn't systematic evidence to say that mindfulness or meditation is as good as antidepressants. There is good evidence that it helps prevent relapse of depression. That's the strongest evidence there is, that for someone who's had severe depression and is on an antidepressant medication, mindfulness properly practiced can help prevent relapse. So it's an adjunct in depression and in anxiety that is quite severe. And it's very helpful for a lot of people with sort of day-to-day anxiety, day-to-day depression, or the general worries of life.
And just to finish off, you don't actually have to be anxious or depressed to practice meditation. You're not going to be suddenly judged by others. You must have a problem if you're doing this meditation.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's a very good practice for well people who want to increase their awareness, increase their focus, and ultimately increase their happiness.
I'm going to give it another shot. Professor Brendan Kelly, author of The Doctor Who Sat for a Year, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.